This is WEEI Afternoons
with Andy Hart, Nick Fitzy-Stevens,
and three-time Super Bowl champion Ted Johnson on WEEI.
WEEI Afternoons, Andy Hart, Nick Fitzy-Stevens, and joining us now, Ted Johnson.
What's up, boobies? How we doing?
You should call us boobies.
Boobies, yep.
Boobies.
Is that a compliment?
My buds, my bros, my bubbas, my boobies.
Dudes. Is that a bird, a type of bird? Homies? Red-breasted booby or something like that, or some blue-breasted booby.
No, keep talking. You'll figure it out.
It's a term of affection.
Just work it out. Just work it out in the air. It's fine. Hey,
go with it.
I want to share a quick update. During the commercial break, I asked Stiz and Dan if they had the Little League World Series on, because I know there's some weather in the Williamsport area, and if the games are on. And Stiz goes, oh, I got it on right here, right now. I'm watching Chinese Taipei. Win right now.
You've never heard of Chinese Taipei?
I did now, Andy.
Taipei. Chinese Taipei.
Well, they're like they're always in like the final. They're a powerhouse. I feel like you're always hearing that. Wow, you're not a big fan of the
new sports guy over here. Don't forget, we've just discovered that sports are
of
exciting.
All the things, you want to bust his balls on?
Oh, I wasn't.
Oh, okay.
Ted Chinese Johnson, before Taipei. We get beautiful. To the 3-point stance, yep. Fitzy and I had our chance to open the show just talking about the $5.7 million. Jimmy Fund telethon record. Just wanted to get your sort of reaction to what went on.
Well, I was very proud just to have a itsy-bitsy, teeny-weeny, small part in it. This is my first Jimmy Fund. A lot of you guys have been working here for a long time. You guys have been doing this for years, so it's old hat. But I enjoyed the heck out of yesterday. I really did. Being there, I thought, I didn't think the interviews would, be as heartwarming as they were when you consider all the people are sitting there, the cameras are watching. But every doctor and every patient and every patient's family that we had on were so comfortable and so relaxed and so engaging. And it just, if you didn't, just feel good about yourself and helping out what is a tremendous cause, then that's on you. So I was very, very proud to be a part of the EEI family and a part of what was, to me, one of the best days you can have doing this business.
Yeah, absolutely. And you mentioned the stories. Obviously, it worked because it got people to reach into their pockets and make donations for the past 2 days that reached record numbers. So it's awesome.
And I just got to say, when you're in when you meet like politicians or CEOs or doctors or PR publicists, the people that run these types of events, I'm always amazed at how smart they are. Like they are some of the sharpest, just most impressive people. And all the people that we were in contact with, getting the tour of Dana-Farber last week, and then also just yesterday in the last 2 days, everyone associated with that foundation and that hospital is very impressive to me.
And you know what the best part of the game was last night, Fitzy, before the Red Sox blew it? Because let's be honest, it kind of sucked for most of the game other than the low home run. Our boy Kevin Martin Jr., remember him, talking about his marathons. I tune in. I forget what inning, maybe third, fourth inning.
Yeah.
And I look up, and he's telling his story on Nesson. So he stole the show there, too. So
yeah, side note, I like D-Lo. Big fan of D-Lo.
Awesome.
He was great.
Didn't know he moved back to the area. Didn't know that was a thing. And so, I don't know, D-Lo, if you're out there listening, you ever want to play some golf, invite me to your private country club. I'm sure Black Rock there.
Or take us out to dinner and hang. Dinner and hang him.
Yeah, by all means.
How did our gal Allie do on her first pitch?
I didn't see it, so that tells me it was fine. Because I feel like if it had gone horribly bad, we would have seen it. So I'm guessing she nailed it. Another impressive I would have expected nothing less with the support of her
prep. She was impressive lady.
She was ready to go, too. So, very impressive showing by our guests. We appreciate them, and we appreciate all the donations. But it is 3 o'clock, and that means it's time for the 3-point stance.
319! Ready! 319!
319! Yeah, there you go!
What's that?
It's the 3-point stance.
I'm going to count to three.
Tatum puts up a three. Bang!
Easy as 1, 2, 3.
Pasternak, a hat trick and a 4-3 Boston lead.
Three.
And it is gone. A 3-run homer and the game is tied.
On WEEI Afternoons.
Time for today's three-point stance here on WEEI Afternoons, brought to you by Jeffrey Glassman Injury Lawyers, Boston's go-to injury attorney for over 30 years. If you've been hurt in a car or work accident, or you're publicly campaigning to golf with Derek Lowe, you got to get Glassman. Call all sevens at 617-777-7777. 3 o'clock here on WEEI Afternoons, three hosts, each of which will present their stances on the biggest stories in the world of sports today. Our order is Andy Hart, Nick Fitzy-Stevens, then Ted Johnson. Andy, you get 60 seconds for your opening stance. Are you ready?
Absolutely.
All right, here's 60 seconds. Go right ahead.
So the Red Sox are teetering. That's the reality. They head to New York, and after this series, I think there will be people pushing the panic button. I'm not going to wait that long. I do not like what I see as we hit mid-August. I am concerned that we're going down the same old road with the Boston Red Sox, and I owe an apology to Dan Ball, but more importantly, to Dan Ball's analytics. We talked about it, I believe, last week when I was questioning why the Red Sox had a worse chance to make the postseason than the Yankees that were behind them in the standings. I didn't get it, didn't get the numbers. Well, now I get it. It's showing itself. The Red Sox are going in the wrong direction. They're still at 70% chance to make the postseason. Feels high to me at this point after I argued it last week. The Yankees are now 95% chance to make the postseason. So let's see. Their starting pitching is questionable. Their bullpen is questionable. Their timely hitting is questionable. And people don't trust the manager, who in recent years has acknowledged and admitted that his baseball team tends to fade late in the season. It's August. September is coming. And I really, really, really starting to wonder if October will be coming. Doesn't feel like it is. Panic now!
Never question the numbers, Andy.
Sorry, Brez. Did you just say hit the panic button?
Yeah, I'm hitting the panic button. I don't know how you can do anything else. And I know this team has done this a bunch of times where, like, they suck, and then they're great, and then they're great, and then they suck.
Pretty much the first 2 months of the season.
Yeah,
yeah.
But
they're super streaky.
Yeah, so this doesn't feel good. This doesn't feel right.
And stay out of my shower.
Sorry, Brez. Didn't mean to talk about you in the shower. That was a little awkward. That was Tommy Heinsohn awkward right there. I why am I supposed to believe in this baseball team? They're kicking away Garrett Crochet games. So that's the one thing that's supposed to be the known commodity here is Garrett Crochet. Either he kicks away his own game or they kick away a game he should win. And then everything else is just kind of the crap they've been dealing with all year, except guess what's missing these days? You know what's missing?
What's that?
The hot streaks by anybody.
Mm-hmm.
The hot streaks where you're like, oh my God, they can score so many runs. They lead baseball in this and their runs differential is that. Doesn't feel like that baseball team right now. And then, and I know I've argued against this, Ted, history mattering.
Yep.
Because this team, you know, has a lot of players and a lot of talent that wasn't here in recent years, but they're starting to look like the same old Sox.
So just so people understand what Andy's saying, at least in the last 5 years, Coors' record is 56%. He wins 56% of the games in the first half to only 44% of the games in the second half of
the seasons.
Yeah, so that's just been the data.
And he's acknowledged it. We talked to him about it last year where he started to, you know, question – the way they go about things, the preparation, the management, just different things. Because if it happens year after year, maybe there's a reason it's happening year after year. So, yes, my faith in the Boston Red Sox has been shaken.
You know what's scary is that they came out of the All-Star break looking pretty good. So it wasn't like they are – not the All-Star break, but the trade deadline.
Yep.
So it was like, okay, are they going to have a post-trade deadline, you know, swoon where they feel sorry for themselves, suck their thumbs? No, this team – they're not good enough to feel that way. They had a lot of young guys, and so they're not going to be sitting there complaining about missed opportunities to get guys at the trade deadline. So they never were impacted by the inactivity at the trade deadline, and yet they're still where they are. So that's something to kind of keep in mind when you're looking at this team right now.
All right, Dan Ball.
All right, Fitzy, anything you want to add before we move on?
No, I hate to say it, I'm riding sidecar to these fellas on this one. I'm the panic button. I haven't hit it, but I got my itchy trigger finger right on it, and I do not like the way this team is trending right now. I would hate to see the Yankees bury the Red Sox this weekend. It would remind me of 2006 when they had a four-game series at Fenway. The Yankees smoked the Sox and took them out of the playoff hunt.
Yes, indeed. That's kind of has that feel to it. So your finger is nearly on. It's on the panic button, but not hitting it. Andy's already hit it, and we'll leave that one there. Fitzy, are you ready?
Sure thing. Why not, kid?
All right. Here's 60 seconds. Go right ahead.
All right. Well, you heard that little impromptu semi three-point stance I did in the 2 o'clock hour about how they miss Marcelo Meyer. But I want to turn to football right now because we got a big pretend season game tomorrow night in the Meadowlands with the Patriots taking on the Giants. But there's been a lot made in the last week as to several high-priced veteran NFL players who might be seeking a trade, some on the offensive side of the ball, some on the defensive side of the ball. And there was even some reports that the New England Patriots had reached out to the Cincinnati Bengals and contacted them, trying to gauge a price on all-world pass rusher Trey Hendrickson. Of course, we've already talked many times about trying to trade for receiver Terry McLaurin of the Commanders. And if I'm the New England Patriots right now, as good as Trey Hendrickson may still be, though he is on the other side of 30, and as awesome as Terry McLaurin was last year with Jaden Daniels, and consistent as he's been in his whole career, those are not the two guys that I'm most concerned with. I'm either going to mortgage the farm if Dallas does choose chaos and trades Micah Parsons or he demands to get out, or I'm looking for offensive line help because I don't think Trey Hendrickson or Terry McLaurin are going to fix what this team needs in 2025.
That last part, could not agree more. If you can find an offensive lineman, I almost don't care what position he plays now because they don't really know half the positions that their guys are playing these days. They're moving bodies around. Vrabel talked about it right after or before the preseason game that they're just trying to find the right five. They keep, you know, you have Ben Brown is being elevated. You had Jared Wilson, who was demoted, now re-promoted. There's just, it's all, I mean, the one known commodity is Will Campbell at left tackle because you're going to sink or swim, or Ted's probably got another Texas phrase that he could throw out there. Like, that's all you got at left tackle. Fitzy, I don't know what's out there. I haven't seen a lot of...
I haven't heard either.
The reality is, this is a bigger picture football reality that I've talked about. There's not enough linemen to go around in the NFL, in college. I mean, how many teams do you see where they talk about how bad the line is or they're moving, like, at all levels? High schools don't have linemen, which means colleges don't have linemen, which means NFL teams don't have linemen. But yes, if they could find anybody that weighs approximately 313 pounds and is 6'4" or larger and athletic, I'm interested.
And can hold a block, exactly. Let me ask a question. This is just sort of like a general overarching football question, dovetailing off of what you just said, Andy. Is there a deficit of linemen now? Because you can certainly get paid a ton of money to be a good lineman. So it's not that it's not rewarding financially speaking at the highest level. But does the physical toll of football, concussions, etc., is that taking its toll on lineman development at the highest level?
Yes. I don't know about that, but there's a deficiency of linemen. Whether it be the college game is so different than the pro game that they're having a hard time adjusting to the pro game, so they just never get fully developed. There's not a lot of time to, you know, give these guys, you know, to figure it out. But I don't know if it's the concussions, but I just know that if I had to guess, I think offensive linemen are probably the hardest to find.
Oh, absolutely.
At this time of year.
And at all levels.
At all levels.
Colleges are giving more scholarships and quicker scholarships to big guys because there's always athletes because they're coming out of 7-on-7, this and that. There are less. Fitzy, I have these theories about social media, video games, kids not being as focused and hardworking, especially maybe kids that are a little overweight, and in the old days, maybe some hardcore gym teacher grabs him by the ear and says, "Let's get in the weight room. Your ticket out of here is football." I don't think that happens as much. I definitely think there's a lack, and I also think there's less contact to develop offensive linemen, even in high schools and colleges. There's no double sessions. So I think line play is really hard. I think it's really, really hard. There's a reason those guys. I remember when I was in college, everybody would be leaving. And the offensive line coach would be bringing in a stack of pizzas because they were just starting their next meeting with the offensive line to go over all their adjustments and calls. And it's really hard to do without reps and time and development, and there's not enough.
Do you think it's hard to improve your offensive line as drastically, as bad as the Patriots' offensive line is, to drastically improve their offensive line in one offseason?
Yes.
Do you think?
I really do, because even look at some of the examples in recent years, guys we've lusted after, the Juwan whatever that went to Kansas City and then wasn't very, like, guys
terrible.
Guys get like $80 million to save offensive lines, and then usually halfway through the year, the new place they're at is like, we didn't really get return on our $80 million invest. It's really hard to turn lines
it
around.
It is, but let me give you one example. What was another offensive line that was pretty beat up last year? That
Chicago.
Da Bears.
So Chicago had the 28th ranked offensive line last year.
Yep.
That's being kind.
Patriots proved that with 8 sacks against them?
Nine.
According to Pro Football Focus, they are currently the 4th rated offensive line. Well, what did they do, Ted? Well, they went out and they got 2 offensive linemen.
Do tell.
When I tell you that they draft, you know, when I say you got to win March and April to win in September.
Yeah.
The Bears are making my case because on March 12th this year, the Bears traded for Joe Tooney for a 2026 4th-round draft pick is what they did. And then the other guy, why is his name skipping me? I can't – what was the other guard that they got? I can't – Jonah something, and I can't remember. But they got 2 interior offensive linemen in trades in March. And now they have had the 28th ranked offensive line last year to already the 4th best.
Jonah Jackson,
thank you. Just by making a couple of trades way back in March.
And also, Patriots, Ted, I believe they spent a lot of money on Drew Dalman, which was really money well spent.
So they attacked their problem a long time ago, and now they don't have all the problems that we have. Because you don't have an offensive line. Then you don't have a quarterback. If you don't have a quarterback, then you don't have wide receivers. Then what do you have? So
Nothing. It's
the most important unit on a football team. I don't understand why teams don't understand that, other than the Bears.
Okay, so to revisit Andy's in the comment from Fitzy, that Yankee series you talked about was a 5-game series, and they lost all 5 en route to going 9-21 in the month of August.
Oh, this was 06 I'm talking. I remember, yes. Daniel Bard getting absolutely smoked in every appearance, and that it was just a brutal, brutal, brutal.
Good news is you can't lose 5 games in this series.
That's true.
It's
that's
only
true.
4.
You can lose 5 games in a row because you've already lost the first 3. Yep. Ted, let me ask you, from a scale of 1 to 10, how passionate are you about your 3-point stance today?
Not probably a 5.
Okay.
6.
Okay. I was judging if we need a spare segment for this, but can you fit it in before we go to trending?
I can fit it in.
Okay. Well, here's 60 seconds. Good luck ahead.
All right. Here we go. So the Red Sox are 3-7 in their last 10 games. 3-7. And we asked Rob Bradford last week when we were at Fenway, you know, What is their biggest issue other than pitching? And he didn't really have an answer. Oh, but I have an answer for you, Bradfo. The answer is hitting, and specifically timely hitting. You know, in the last 10 games, the Red Sox right now are hitting a total of .228. Their batting average is .228 in the last 10 games. And part of that is because of one Sedane Rafaela. All right, Sedane Rafaela, who has been – who got basically – did not play last night because I guess he's got, he needed a rest, a mental rest. But they moved him about a month ago from center field to second base. And all of a sudden, that move, he doesn't know how to hit the damn baseball. Before he was moved to second base when he was playing a Golden Glove outfield of center field, he had a .271 average, a .312 on-base percentage, a .477 slugging percentage. Since moving to second base, he's got a .189 batting average, a .239 on-base percentage, and a .253 slugging percentage. Alex Cora has told us before that moving positions does not affect your batting. I would disagree with you, Alex. I think it's definitely having an impact specifically on your Sedane Rafaela, your premier center fielder.
So another argument to bring up Vaughn Grissom to play second base, put Rafaela back in center field, and watch everything take off for the better.
Who sits?
Well, Willie Abreu right now, because he's hurt, and Yoshida. They never play.
Okay, so...
So now I have Duran, Anthony,
Abreu,
and
Rafaela. 4 guys for 3 spots. Perfect. Just where we were before the trade.
One of them is DHing. One of them is DHing.
Okay, so who's DHing?
That we can rotate DHs.
We asked Cora about Christian Campbell moving positions and impacting his batting average. He looked at me like I didn't know baseball, which I don't. It's like now he does, and you're looking at it now. You want to say, Alex, really? You want to? That to me, there's something. I could see that these guys are so mental about everything that I could see a position change affecting like everything they do.
I used the reference point earlier. I don't know whether it's true or not, but Mookie Betts is one of the greatest players of this generation. He's proven that over an extended period of time. And he's having a terrible year, which coincides with him having to play shortstop. Coincidence? Maybe.
I think not.
Or think not. Ted has the answer. Ted likes to answer Ted's questions.
I also think it's fair to say that Rafaela in the 2 years prior was playing all over the field, and he was nowhere near the hitter that he was when he was playing center field every day. So you know with the player that he can't really handle it.
So this is analytics. This is science, Dan. We have come to the solution. Fix Rafaela by putting him back in center field. Figure out second base some other way.
I would agree. Ted, I think you nailed it. You may not know baseball in your own mind, but I think you knew it in this position.
This one, hey, clock twice a day is wrong, right?
One thing that Ted Johnson does know is football. And in case you didn't realize it, the Patriots had a preseason game last weekend that we didn't have a chance to talk about because of the Jimmy Fund Telethon. We are going to react to everything that happened in the second preseason game, because the third preseason game is on tap for tomorrow night. That's up next here on WEEI Afternoons. But first, Dan Ball, Mr. Analytics, has what's trending.
Now, more of WEEI Afternoons
with Hart, Fitzy, and Johnson.
Some of his best practices this year were those two practices in Minnesota, in my opinion. You know, is he progressing? Is he regressing? He's still in his early 20s, about to be 23 years old. It's really difficult to say anything in terms of this is like a linear progression. It's going to be dips and dives, and there are going to be peaks and valleys, Kayla. And I think today was actually, you know, he's kind of getting back on the upswing after a couple of down days.
That was our buddy Phil Perry, NBC Sports Boston, Tom Curran's cohort, breaking down the ebbs and flows of
my co-host is the breakdown.
Oh, and your co-host on the breakdown,
starting in the first Monday after the start of the season.
I've also check been told out, by o'clock, the NBC by the sports ladies Boston. He's the most attractive man in Boston sports media. That he's a stud.
What ladies have told you that?
A number of ladies.
Dude, have you seen? I think he downplays his workout regime. I'm always kind of trying to get more out of him about what he worked. It makes it sound like he barely goes to the. He has made a huge effort to get into the weight room and put some muscle on.
Nice.
He's kind of V'd up right now.
Ooh.
And yet he's very coy about what he's been doing.
Interesting.
Handsome, interesting. Smart, just super smart. Fit. And Andy also likes the big beers like your old pal Fitzy as well.
Yeah, he's a cool dude. He Phil Perry. But he was talking about Drake May, who has had a non-linear development. This summer, there's been some ups and downs, some good days, some bad days. Even some of the good days, if you remember, Josh McDaniels talking about on the broadcast, which, side note, I do like the in-game interviews they've been doing at Kraft Sports Production with Josh McDaniels, Elliot Wolf, some of the key guys, decision makers during the game, nice addition. But Josh McDaniels talked about everything that Minnesota threw at him during the practice week. He handled pretty well, like the wheels didn't fall off the cart, so to speak, which maybe they could have. So let's just start there. The Patriots won 20-12. Patriots are 2-0, baby. Undefeated Patriots. We feel like an undefeated football team right now. Is that how we're trending right now? Because it doesn't really feel like that to me. But Ted Johnson, I'll start with you. If I just said, like, what was your biggest takeaway from little Saturday afternoon football, which is your forte, we learned?
My biggest takeaway is that the biggest problem with this team is going to be depth. That's going to be their biggest problem. I mean, that was probably my biggest takeaway since the beginning of this. They're not going to have the horses to get it done if they have guys getting hurt in key positions. That's my biggest takeaway. It's really hard to glean too much when you consider the two teams they played in preseason didn't even start their starters on both sides of the ball. I mean, honestly, so it's I will say this. It's just I think. You know, another big takeaway in a positive sense is it's going to be more buttoned up. They did have a delay game penalty, which I found interesting. And do you guys know the length of time from which Tom Brady got a delay game penalty to his second delay game penalty later in his career? If that makes sense.
What, 2 years, 3 years?
Multiple seasons. 5 seasons, 6 seasons, 7 seasons.
7 seasons.
7 seasons between delay of game penalties.
A delay of game. Think about that. You know what? It's just you see them all the time. Aaron Rodgers gets 20 of them a year. And Tom Brady went 7 years between delay of game penalties. So, look, that's going to be expected for a young guy trying to get a handle on this new offense. But it's going to be more buttoned up, but I just think they're not going to have the horses to me be, I don't know. Play, you know, they're borderline playoff potentially built type of team. But if they get too many injuries in key positions, then all bets are off.
So Fitzy, I'll give you your opportunity. We can call this the Efton Chisholm game, because I think almost universally during the game and then the reaction to the game was that the man with six catches for 71 yards and a touchdown was Efton Chisholm, was going to make the roster. Now, we've had a little wrinkle here where he's missed practice. He was injured in the performance. But
he won't play tomorrow night, yeah.
Yeah, no, he's on a whole list of guys that won't play tomorrow night. But you want to take a victory lap for your boy Efton Chisholm?
I just love the fact that 2 weeks in a row, Mike Vrabel continued to talk about his effort, his playing strength, and how much work the kid has put in, and that it's paying off. It's just a real feel-good story. Forget about the fact that, yeah, oh, New England loves their tiny white slot receivers, and he's a perfect fit for the McDaniels offense. Both of those things can be true. But the fact is, the kid is making good on not just being a college freak who set all the records and knocked off Cooper Kupp's records at Eastern Washington. He's delivering on the potential and showing you why the Pats dropped 259 guaranteed on him as an undrafted free agent. He may just be a fun, more than just like a fun little camp story, Andy. He may be an important cog to a nice little component of this offense that hasn't had a wide receiver not named Efton Chisholm yet stand out during the entirety of the preseason. The only offensive standout, aside from Chisholm, is Travion Henderson.
Yeah, which leads me to believe, and I said this a while, like, the running back room is good. I heard it was Gibson and Ramondre Stevenson actually doing sort of a joint simultaneous press conference the other day talking about the room. And you've even added Jermichael Hasty.
Which some I'm a big fan of.
Yeah, well, and a lot of people are. I'm reading some of these.
He looks
so
good.
We should mention, the preseason finale is tomorrow night in New York. Next Tuesday will be the cut down to 53-man.
I like how they do it now.
Yes.
They don't just, you know, they used to.
Done.
Yeah, they used to, you know, have three different cut down periods. And now it's just they go from 90 to 53, which is better, just one cut down day.
So you're starting to see the projections come out. The Athletic had one, the Globe had one. I've started to read them all. And Jermichael Hasty is starting to be on the roster in a lot of those projections, which is interesting.
I'd have no problem with that.
And if that's true, like, that's definitely one of the better groups on the team. Because you have guys out there that I think we all like in different layers or categories, but we've seen them all make plays.
So that means definitely not seven wide receivers is my guess. They're going to keep three tight ends. Westover's is staying. 87, he's been your lead fullback.
No, he's doing a good job. It's kind of fun seeing an 87 out there as a lead blocker.
Yep, he is doing a good job. But you're right, the running backs, and Jermichael Hasty in particular, have impressed me.
And so we do need to talk about, we kind of led in with the audio of Phil Perry talking about Drake May. And I said to you guys in the elevator, I think, yesterday, one of the things that has sort of benefited from us doing 2 days of Jimmy Fund Telethon was us not exactly following closely and talking and reacting to what was coming out of the practice fields. There were some really bad performances by Drake May.
In the last couple of days.
Yeah, last couple of days, including one in which Phil Perry tweeted out, in 11-on-11 work, there were 18 dropbacks for Drake May. He had him down for 7 sacks in those dropbacks. And I'm not saying that's just Drake May. That's the combination of the offensive line and Drake May, but that's your passing game. That's what you need to do in the year 2025 in the NFL. I think we all can put to bed the idea that you're just going to run the ball, play defense, kick a field goal, and win the game.
Yep.
I don't think that's going to happen. Are you, Ted, growing concerned with this line, Drake May, sacks, turnovers situation?
I don't know how you can't be. I still think it's going to be better than last year. I really do. But there's the offensive line. Definitely is you hit the panic button on the Red Sox season after last night's performance, and I'm close to hitting it with the Patriots with the offensive line, just because it's the same problems we've been hearing. This offensive line's been an issue for years, and they haven't really done anything, I don't know, drastic. Like, I don't know, the Bears that traded for two interior offensive linemen in March. They knew they had problems. They retired of their offensive line being the biggest issue for their team last year, that it stunted the growth of their young quarterback in Caleb Williams. So they went out and made aggressive trades in March, and it's benefiting them already right now. Caleb Williams had a great preseason game the other night, and we're still talking about Drake May's development being delayed mostly and partly and most probably assuredly because of the offensive line.
Well, and part of the issue isn't just the performance. Obviously, that matters. Like, you're blocking people, you protect. We still don't really know what the line's going to look like. And is that Ben Brown? Is he suddenly entering the mix here after a nice end of the season last year?
He had a nice preseason game the other day.
Right. And but they've all, I feel like, had some nice performances and then some less than nice performances that leads Doug Marrone and Mike Vrabel to say, oh, maybe give this guy a chance at this spot. And I don't know what we're going to get. Like, I don't know if I would be willing to bet on a starting five come the opener against the Raiders. And you're right, Ted. It all starts from there. Like, that, as much as we want to talk about Stephon Diggs and we want to talk about Travion Henderson being this steal of a draft pick and Drake May being a stud in year two, if the five guys up front stink, the rest are all going to stink too. Mm-hmm. They're not going to be able to do their jobs. And I don't know right now exactly what that's going to look like. 617-779-7937. What is your biggest concern about the New England Patriots right now? And what, I'll give a more optimistic spin on that. What do you feel best about with the New England Patriots right now? There were some interesting defensive performances in that preseason game on Saturday. We'll talk about the Patriots reacting to that preseason win, even if it didn't always feel like a win on Saturday. That's up next here on WEEI Afternoons.
You're listening to WEEI Afternoons with Hart, Fitzy, and Johnson.
Our job is to constantly come up with ideas, brainstorm, suggestions about players at all levels. And the acquisition of those players isn't as easy sometimes. It takes certainly two sides. Sometimes the player has say, and we have to be really intentional about moves we make, because any move we make sends a message to the rest of the football team. And I think that's something that, trust me, we go through scenarios constantly, multiple times a day, to keep everything alive. Because in the end, how can we make the football team better? How can we go get wins on Sunday? That's what we all want to do. So it's just a constant process that involves a lot of layers.
That was Ryan Cowden.
That was Craig Breslow. I mean, Ryan Cowden.
Uh-oh, do we need a Cowden bot?
Wow. Just, I mean, you know, it's, hey, it takes two to tango. Hey, man, you know, you might as well just say, well, they don't like our players, you know? That should have been next thing that came out of his mouth. Come on, man.
And in these brainstorming sessions, have we brainstormed some offensive linemen? Because that's what I'd be focusing on if we were brainstorming.
I don't need Trey Hendrickson or Terry McLaurin. They're not going to make them. They're really good players. They're not going to turn the tides of this team. But, like, you need offensive linemen. Ted, I'm with you 1,000%. Every time I look at what Ben Johnson did so aggressively this past spring, and I know the Patriots addressed it, but, like, Joe Tooney, proven commodity, works in your system, borderline all pro, got him for a song out there. Not only is he playing at a high level at guard, he's also running routes as a third string tight end, for God's sake.
Let me ask you guys a question. Let me ask Fitzy, Dan, you Stiz, you said this one out, don't worry about it, but if you had to guess how many offensive linemen in the last 10 years have the Patriots drafted? How many offensive linemen in the last 10 years?
Earnest guess?
If you had to guess, there's five players at that, you know, on the offensive line. And in 10 years, how many players have they drafted at the offensive line position?
I'm going with 11.
Okay. Stiz, okay. Sir Rooney, thank you. Daniel?
Dan?
I'll go with 14.
Yep. And Fizzy, what do you, Fizzy, what do you got?
Fizzy's fine. That's Fizzy, after 6 o'clock.
He's like
Fizzy.
A soda.
Sure, adult soda. I'm going to go with 21, Ted.
You know what? I would have guessed closer to 21. Nine.
Wow.
Nine guys.
What?
So Stiz it was closest with 11, but only nine offensive linemen in the last 10 years have the Patriots drafted.
Yeah, that surprised me. That surprised me quite a bit, because I was just thinking two per year average was sort of a general number in my head. So yeah, you're saying they haven't necessarily invested properly in the line?
Yeah. So if you're not going to draft them, then you got to go trade for them, or you got to sign them in free agency.
And then the other issue is some of the ones they've drafted, like Cole Strange with a first round pick, hasn't worked out. He should be a guy right now. The conversation with Cole Strange should be, are you willing to give him $100 million extension, right? Like, that's the conversation. Right now, the conversation is he even going to make this football team?
Do you need $100 for a bus ride out of here?
And I almost think, because it's so, to Fitzy's point earlier, there's just not a lot of good offensive linemen. So when teams get a really good guard or tackle, they're almost like quarterbacks. They almost don't let them leave.
Yep.
They don't get free agency. So it's hard to get good offensive linemen in free agency. If you're and if you're not drafting for them, like the Patriots haven't, then what do you got?
Andy, here's a perfect point. Like right now, you know, the Patriots tried to address the David Andrews retirement situation with Garrett Bradbury. Minnesota, who we obviously just did joint practice work with last week, said, hey, guys, we're going to go ahead and move on from him because he's okay at best in the run game and he stinks at pass pro. They go ahead, they sign an expensive center. They upgrade their line. And this guy's come in and he's so great that he's going to probably get you his job usurped either by a rookie or the guy you picked up off the street in the middle of the season last year.
You know what jumps out at me when I see like a Jared Wilson, I see the right tackle, the Marcus Bryant in the seventh round. When I look at Garrett Bradbury, we little fellas, small guys, not big guys. No offense to small guys, but to play the game of football, you need big, meaty, you know, offensive linemen. And they just look green and young and small and
well, certainly Cole Strange would fit that. I always thought Cole Strange looked like he lacked a little sand in his pants, so to speak. But Mike Onwenu is a big old house of a dude who maybe is too big and has maybe gotten out of shape, fat and happy. And the other thing we need to weave in here is there's been, forget the draft picks, that's one layer of it. They've had a different offensive line coach for 5 straight years. I don't even know, like 5 or 6 straight years, it feels like. You've had stability, no continuity. Mm-hmm. And I think we all believe in Doug Marrone and that you've probably hit on one that you'd like to have for a while here. But it's probably going to take a little time for him to teach them the way he wants everything done and played, and also get guys that are his guys that fit his system. Because right now he's dealing with a lot of holdovers, and maybe that's why he's inclined to play a bunch of rookies. Maybe he wants guys that are more of a clean slate, and I can kind of mold these guys from the ground up day one.
Well, that might be true. I mean, you can see across the board. I almost feel like the philosophy of this new coaching staff is clean slate. If you were here at all in the last 3 years, that you're gone now.
It's almost a detriment to your ability to make the roster. Let's go to the phone line, 617-779-7937. Let's go to Danny in Southie. What's up, Danny? Danny? Danny going once, going twice.
Hey, what's up? Sorry, I was muted.
There he is. You were muted.
What's up, guys? How you doing?
What's up, bud?
I don't think the Pats aren't gonna get anywhere in the playoffs this year. I just don't think we're a team for the future.
All right, thanks for the call, Danny.
Well, he had the schedule on the is what he wanted to talk about, and he did not talk about it. So
yeah, I don't think he was quite ready.
I'm curious what he thought about the schedule.
The schedule is fortuitous. It's easy.
This team, no way, no how. Is this a team that would make noise in the playoffs? Doesn't mean they can't make the playoffs.
Correct.
So can they be one of the 7th best teams in the AFC? I think that is not the craziest thing to ask for in this team.
Basically, it feels more and more like you're trying to steal the 2021 season where Josh McDaniels managed a young quarterback, because we're hearing more and more about what happened in Mac Jones' ear is happening in Drake May's ear. If I can talk till 15 seconds on the play clock, I will be talking until 15 seconds on the play clock, telling you what to do, how to do it, what body language to have when you're doing it. And that's what that team was. They were proven a true pretender when they got absolutely wiped by the Bills, right? But they made the playoffs.
Yep.
Like, that's an accomplishment. And I think that's the best case.
They backed in, though.
But it doesn't matter. That's, if you back in, you're in.
But let me ask you this. When they went to their bye week, right? And they, I don't know, with a little bit further, than they were just past the halfway mark. Did you think they were one of the best teams in the NFL?
That team?
Yeah.
No.
In the AFC?
I did.
No.
I took the cheese, Ted.
I thought they looked pretty good in the AFC. Yeah.
I was not a believer. And this is a conversation I had with Dan. The computers love that team. You started getting projections like they could be a 1 seed. They could go to the Super Bowl. I wasn't a believer in that team.
I don't say that. I just thought I thought they were one of the better teams in the AFC. I'll tell you that. And then they obviously proved that they weren't. What do you think? So what is there's some theories on why Mac Jones fell apart. What do you think is maybe why Mac Jones got off to a hot start and then fizzled?
For his career, for that season.
His rookie season.
My whole thing was he was just wound too tight. I think the pressure got
That there's something to that. But some people would say it was because there was just Josh McDaniels put too much on his plate. Like, it just got more and more intense. And so I don't know. I mean, we're going to look at Drake May's progression through the prism of Josh McDaniels in how he coaches. And so those are going to be something, things that you look like. Are you putting too much? So I'm just thinking, you know, would I want my coaches in my ear, literally, you know, talking to me the whole time, right up until the snap of the ball? No, I wouldn't. That would annoy the hell out of me.
Do you think that's before we get to a break here, do you think that could be a legitimate issue right now with Drake? Forget the system and everything that's in it. Maybe just adjusting to that, having somebody talking into his head as he's looking at the defense.
Making the game, it used to be checkers, and now it's chess, and it used to be easier for him, and now, you know, Josh is making him look at the game in a way that he's an advanced supercomputer, Josh is, because he's seen everything. Now he's got to come back and teach the basics, and I wonder how good he is at that.
617-779-7937. What is your confidence level in Drake May? We've seen two preseason games. We've seen a bunch of joint practice action. We've seen stretches with no picks and no sacks and good decisions. And then we've seen stretches going back to the spring with a lot of turnovers, a lot of bad decisions, fumbles, not looking like he's making that progression for the year two jump. How do you feel about Drake May? 617-779-7937. We'll talk about that next here on WEEI Afternoons.